All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Tech Can Save Us podcast by Literal Humans. I'm super excited by today's episode and our guest. More importantly, it's Pratik Agrawal, who I've worked with for years in the content marketing space. And he's got an exciting new venture out there. And just first of all, welcome, Pratik. How's it going?
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me. Very excited to be here. Things are good. Things are looking up. We just launched a month ago.
That's exciting. And where are you calling in from today?
So I'm working remotely at the moment. I'm in Mumbai, India.
Nice. Okay. I think this is our first interview from someone who's based in India, or maybe even Asia as well. So welcome. That's awesome.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, so you're the founder of Calgy, and you know, just for our audience purposes, tell us what Calgy is.
Yeah, so the journey to starting Calgy began in 2019. Basically, an annual checkup revealed that my cholesterol levels were higher than expected for someone my age, and I was like 28 at the time. So this was largely due to genetic conditions, which also means that I'm at a higher risk for heart disease in the future. The doctor recommended that I improve my diet and take fish oil. Growing up as a vegetarian, I was hesitant, but I gave it a try. I didn't like the fishy aftertaste, and there was also the ethical issue of taking fish oil. And at that point, I looked to vegan alternatives that seemed promising, but they too had this fishy odor and contained something called carrageenan. Carrageenan is a red seaweed extract that's widely used in the food industry. But there's some controversy as to whether it causes gut inflammation, and that was something I wanted to avoid. At this point, I realized that I could make something better that would not only be a more sustainable alternative fish, but would address issues that I faced and read about. And that's kind of how I started Calgy and our first product, which is a vegan omega-3 supplement.
That's awesome. I mean, and you sort of already answered my second question there about like your personal connection to the mission. So that's great. I mean, that resonates with me a lot because I've been on kind of like a health journey, going vegan, going plant-based, taking supplements and things like that. I think I told you when you emailed me that I'm like, oh, wow, I've been looking for, you know, a supplement just like this. So your timing was impeccable there. So that's awesome. Thanks for sharing your story. That personal health journey story is not always easy to share. So that's great.
Yeah. And I think that like when you said that you've been on this, health and wellness journey, it's kind of playing into a broader trend. I think that's probably thanks to COVID, where there's more interest in health, wellness, and nutrition. You know, people want to take care of their body, and they do realize that, you know, doing that now can help prevent chronic illness. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's one thing, that, you know, one positive thing that comes out of living through a pandemic is everyone's a public health nerd now, you know. But I mean, that's what's great about your product and sort of like, it just seems like you're hitting all the right notes in terms of, you know, it being sort of a booster, a supplement for health. The way you're sourcing the materials seems, you know, very ethical and sustainable. It's just, you know, just hitting multiple levels there. Was that purposeful, or how did you put together all the pieces there like that?
It sounds like everything was thought out when you listed like that, but honestly, it was a natural progression to solve my own problem of finding something that was fish-free. And then I wanted to find the best algae oil possible, which meant it had to be traceable, pure, chemical-free, and odorless. So then it had to be grown indoors. And that also reduces and minimizes the environmental impact.
I find that like one of the things we talk about on the podcast all the time is tech for good and defining it, and basically, you know, we keep coming back to this issue of people are just like, some of the best founders are just trying to solve these problems for themselves, you know? So like starting with that and then building out from there of, oh, actually, you know, there might be other people who are dealing with this problem and, you know, could benefit from this. So it's cool to hear, you know, your journey and how you took that from a personal mission into, you know, a public product. So that's great.
Right. You know, recently I've come across a ton of small and innovative food brands in this space that are doing amazing things. For example, there's this company called Moonshot Snacks that's based in the US, and they sell crackers. It's founded by a woman of color. They use regenerative farming practices, and they've been carbon neutral since day one. So I see like the newer companies and younger founders focusing beyond organic, non-GMO and these kind of labels and evaluating the entire carbon footprint, so the supply chain. On the other side, you have these meat-free alternatives or like plant-based meats that have raised a lot of money and, you know, and they've become mainstream very quickly. You know, they're sold at Starbucks, McDonald's and everywhere. And I think this is a very exciting space to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of interesting as you're analyzing the market there as well to sort of see like some people doing it in a way that's like, all right, let's go big and fast and maybe not worry as much about, you know, slap a vegan label on something and not worry as much about some of the other impacts.
Yeah.
But then as you're saying, seeing organizations being like, okay, let's think about hitting all the right notes purposely from the beginning. That's one thing we see in the Tech for Good space is people trying to like graft purpose and product onto the back end of something, you know, and that's like very hard, you
right.
know, so it's, I don't know, good on you for starting out with, you know, like trying to hit all the right notes from the beginning and doing it by design.
Right.
So along those lines, like, where do you see Calgy going? Like what's the growth strategy?
So right now we're focused on, just the vegan omega 3, but we do intend to expand into other supplements over time. And whatever we do next, we want to maintain the same approach of using clean, sustainable, and effective ingredients. Part of our mission is to create plant-based health supplements that are not only good for you, but also for the planet.
So what does that look like specifically? Like what would a supplement that's good for an individual, but also good for the planet? Is that like regenerative farming? Like what exactly is that feedback loop?
Yeah, so for an example, in our case, we're providing an alternative to fishing. And as I read more and more about the fishing industry, I found it really disgusting. And there was a statistic that 25% of all the fish that's caught, which is about 25 million tons of fish every year, doesn't end up on a human plate. You know, that goes through this reduction process is what they call it. Basically like, you know, chemically cleaning the fish and like basically turning it into fish oil and food for animals. And you know, it's not a sustainable future for the ocean. We're losing an entire layer of fish between like the small fish and the apex predators. And that's gonna have an impact for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's as I've been getting on this health, you know, plant-based vegan journey, like it's, you start to understand when you learn more, like why so many, I think vegans and plant-based people get a bad rap for being preachy, you know, but it's also like when you read these incredible statistics, you know, about what it's doing to the planet, what it's doing to, you know, animal life, what it's doing to ourselves, our own bodies, like it's kind of hard not to, you know, and I don't go around like lecturing my friends on like, you shouldn't eat meat, you shouldn't eat fish, but it's sort of like,
yeah.
You know, these are incredible stats and incredible, incredibly unfortunate realities that we're facing. So, yeah, good on you to like read up on it and act on it. That's very admirable. Talk to me about the broader, like you're in the supplement space. And so, you know, talking about a space that like kind of gets a bad rap, like, you know, what are your thoughts on it? You know, and how do you see Calgy as changing the game in that space?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the FDA doesn't regulate supplements. They only go after companies when they make claims that are, you know, clearly false and would harm consumers. But supplements aren't tested. There are a lot of research papers and studies conducted. But on our end, what we're trying to do is focus on transparency. Omega-3 also happens to be one of the most widely studied supplements. There are over 30,000 studies and research papers that have been published. I think because it has such a big impact, you know, it affects your heart. It may basically help your overall immunity. So I think that's a big reason why in the US especially, because these kind of chronic diseases are really prevalent, that there's such an interest in trying to find a solution for people. And then on our end, you know, we want to be transparent and we want to tell people that, you know, this is our journey. This is the product we picked and here's why we picked it. All the ingredients we use and how buying from us makes a difference. You know, for example, I will tell you that if you can get your nutrients or vitamins naturally from your diet, then you shouldn't take any supplement.
Interesting stuff. Like, sort of getting back to your, like, your audience, like, you know, tell us, like, who's your sort of target audience for Calgy, and what made you, you know, target that audience so specifically and go so niche, would you say?
Our target audience are vegans and vegetarians. They don't generally get enough omega-3s from their diet. They can eat seeds and nuts that contain omega-3s. And like a really simple explanation is that these seeds and nuts contain one kind of omega-3 fatty acid that converts into a more essential omega-3 fatty acid, but at a very low rate, so like at like 5 or 10%. So that's where we come in to help people meet those recommended levels. They just don't get that from their diet.
I mean, one thing we find too, obviously, we've seen this in content marketing, but like sometimes when you go so niche, it can be really helpful, you know, just in terms of like signaling to your audiences and helpful in terms of just producing content for them and reaching them exactly. In so many ways. So yeah, it seems like you found a really good sweet spot there. Tell us, like, what's been the reception? Like, what, you know, do you have any like client feedback or testimonials you could share? And like, you know, just, I'm sure you're learning tons as a new founder, just like listening to your clients, like super curious about that.
So far the feedback has been positive. People, you know, are really happy with the product and they love the branding. And I you mentioned this a bit before about vegans being preachy, and we had our first experience of that, and it was actually enlightening. So one of our ingredients listed on the product that I can't pronounce at the moment, but basically she assumed that it contained palm oil and said our product wasn't vegan. And you know, I was scratching my head and thinking like, why isn't palm oil vegan? And then I went down this Google rabbit hole of trying to figure out why. And basically it turns out that vegans don't consider palm oil vegan to be vegan because it causes destruction of the environment and like loss of habitat for mammals. So it's not cruelty free. And then later I learned that it's our product actually doesn't contain palm oil and it wasn't an issue at all. But it was just interesting to me that people have like such varied perceptions, and that, you know, as much as we try to learn and like read and research, until we speak to customers and interact with them, we can't really, you know, understand the problems they face.
No, that's a really interesting example of, you know, frankly, listening to your customers, doing research, and then, you know, I feel like you would have acted on it, you know, if you needed to change your product a little bit there to the extent that, you know, it made sense for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I went down a similar rabbit hole with palm oil because I kept, you know, becoming a vegan, I kept like reading about like, well, frankly, I saw products that had sort of no palm oil advertised. And I was like, what's the deal with palm oil? And then I went down probably the same rabbit hole. So cool. Well, I mean, look, you've got a cool product. And we wish you luck because we think you're, you know, just you're filling a void and a space that really needs to be filled.
Thanks.
And yeah, I felt that when you approached me with it, and I was like, wow, this is exactly what I've been looking for. I'm exactly your target market. So, so yeah, that was nice.
That's awesome.
And yeah, like switching gears a little bit, just curious, like getting into sort of broader questions that we always talk about on the pod here. Curious, like how you run Calgy, like what kind of tech stack do you work with? I've always seen you as like a very, you know, tech oriented guy. Like I feel like on teams we've worked on, you've always been the go-to guy to like solve a lot of, you know, in-depth tech products. So yeah, just super curious what you're working with, and if you have any game-changing tech products you've been using, please share it with us.
Yeah, sure. So it's a custom site that's built on Shopify, but it's like very simple tech-wise. But I think Shopify itself has been a game changer. Yeah, you know, there's a whole app ecosystem that offers everything that you can think of to create a successful e-commerce business, like you can compete with the likes of like Amazon or like on like with the technology that they offer, it's made available to everyone. And it's so simple that you can like literally chart the rise of Shopify's stock price at the onset of the pandemic. You know, they've been a godsend to mom and pop retailers all over the world. So yeah, that would definitely be like one of the best and easiest to use e-commerce platforms or like technology even.
Yeah, it's such a simple concept too. It's like, hey, you know, we really love small businesses. We love mom and pops. How do we digitize them or give them the tools to digitize themselves? You know, like it's just,
yeah.
In that sense, would you, and this is, again, we always talk about this in the podcast, would you then classify Shopify as tech for good because of that?
Yeah, I would solely based on that. I can't think of anything wrong that they've done or like evil in that sense. So yeah, I would say they're tech for good.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm a huge supporter of small businesses and I grew up with two parents who are small business owners. I run a small business. So if you tell me there's a platform that's like empowering small businesses to do good, I'm all for it. I would categorize it as tech for good. I wonder if Shopify has like ever run into issues, maybe we should have them on the pod, with like people selling things that they don't support. Like could someone sell like weapons, yeah, or, you know, not good for human supplements, you know what I mean? Like stuff like that, that I wonder if they've like moderated it all. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, so we actually had a client in the content marketing agency a few years ago that sold merchant services, so like payment processing. And during that research, I learned that Shopify actually doesn't allow certain categories, like anything that's sexual or like displays violence, you know, anything legal, drugs. So yeah, they do have a policy, and I think they do moderate as much as they can, right, all of this stuff.
Yeah, interesting. Along those lines, you know, again, like, we talk about different products, like solving different problems for people. You have just started one, but what's like a problem that you think tech isn't able to solve for humanity?
I'd say that building a personal connection. So, you know, with all the personalization that technology has to offer us today, which I'm sure will only get better over time, it's still hard to replicate that human to human connection. And I know that your agency, Literal Humans, is based on that idea of building a human-to-human connection between a brand or a company and either another brand or business or a consumer. So I wanted to get your process on like helping brands bridge that gap.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think you know, one thing I've been missing is just like having a dinner with friends, or, you know, like sweating my ass off in a nightclub or a festival with friends, you know what I mean? Like dancing the music.
Yeah.
That I think is just irreplaceable. Like I kind of laugh at some of these live streams. I'm like, I am alone in my living room right now. Like this is not the same thing. But, and I just like put down my laptop and now I'm watching the same thing on the same laptop. So yeah, I'm with you. And then I guess like how we like to look at it, I think it's, you know, it's a little bit of art, right? Like I think, you know, a nice substitute for building connections can be sharing human stories. So we try to encourage clients to tell, you know, like personal narratives from their team or from their clients that we think will, you know, frankly, drive leads and sales and things like that. You know, we try to take more of a multimodal approach. So like, you know, mixing in audio and video with written content, and sort of like lifting up some of those individual stories. I think on the front end, it's like, you know, much deeper, you know, customer persona development and research into that, to just really nail that piece of it. So it's, yeah, it's layered. It's like, I think there are a lot of content marketing agencies, you know, God love them, who, you know, they're very into like the kind of tech SEO nerdery of it. And that's all important. Yeah. That's good. You know, you need to do that. And we sort of assume that we do that, which we do. Like it's just assumed in our process, I mean. But like, how do you layer on another level of art, of human connection, of, you know, just
exactly.
Yeah. So that's our USP. I mean, you know, people are welcome to debate it, but that's our approach. And I think clients like it. Like, you know, I think we hit the market at a time when a lot of companies were like, all right, you know, the things we were doing before aren't going to resonate. People are changing their priorities. So, you know, I think we've been really lucky in that sense.
Yeah. I think, it's definitely, there's more awareness, amongst consumers of like choosing which brands get their business and like voting with their wallet.
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's also in the data too. You know what I mean? It's like you look at, you know, these constant surveys of Gen Z and millennials and such, and you see that, you know, like you just said, they're prioritizing, they're selecting towards, you know, businesses that they see as doing good, being good, and away from businesses that they see as not doing that. So that's a huge part of the human to human marketing and connection piece, is like just who you choose to work with, who we choose to work with, how they do their work. That's very important to us, you know, so.
No, that's awesome. And I love that about your agency.
We're trying. I mean, it's not, it's not always. Someone approached me the other day and they were like, oh, I have a client, a potential client for you. This is like a freelancer. And they were like, but I'm not sure if, you know, if you'd consider them tech for good. And I sort of like laughed and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, well, we probably would, like, as long as they're not like, I don't know, like oil and gas. And the person got really quiet. They got really quiet. And then they were like, it's the Shell Foundation. And I was like, oh, crap. So, you know, but like that I think is an interesting example, because it's like, you know, a lot of these companies that maybe aren't doing something so great with their product, they have these charitable foundations, or, you know, the charitable giving, which you could potentially call tech for good. But like, is it, you know, and does that cancel out the bad that they're doing with like destroying the planet? Like, no, this is a short answer. So
no. Yeah.
So yeah, that was a funny little moment of testing our values there.
that's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Perfect segue, to our quintessential tech for bad question here. What would you consider the evilest application of tech that you've seen out there?
This is a tough one, because I can think of many, many examples. But I'd pick Amazon because of how they treat the warehouse workers in particular. I mean, they do a lot, but I'll stick to that. You know, the way they track their every movement to maximize efficiency, it's a thankless job. And I think it's just getting worse and worse because of our dependency on Amazon for everything.
I just ordered two things from Amazon last night and I feel like a piece of shit. Like I really don't feel great about it. And I've got like one more order queued up in my little, you know, my little cart. And I'm just like, I am such a dirtbag for continuing to, but I think I'm like, this is my thinking. I'm like, oh, I'm a good person because I don't have Prime and I don't use, but then I still order from them and just pay shipping every time like an idiot. And then I like use my friend's Prime Video subscription because I'm an asshole. Like, it's just like, oh man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an ethical dilemma.
Real question though. I was like, okay, I need a bath mat, right? Like I need a mat for my tub because it's slippery. Right. And I don't want me or any of my family members falling and breaking their necks in the tub. So like, am I going to like go Google like tub, like store, like hardware store, like where, you know what I mean? Look around my neighborhood. And it just becomes this like compounding problem of like money, time, you know, emotional sort of investment. Like when it's so, so easy to just pop on my phone and have that thing in my hands in 2 days. Like it's just,
I know they made it too easy and too convenient.
So on the flip side of that, if you were to develop, you know, a new tech product other than Calgi, what would it be, and what problem would it solve, and for whom?
Okay, so I'd pick better and more efficient batteries for electric vehicles, simply because they're really hard to recycle, and at the moment it requires mining of new material. So, you know, doing things like improving their lifespan, reducing their cost, or increasing their capacity could have a huge environmental and social impact. And, you know, that'd be like the tipping point for mass adoption. You know, countries would develop strategy and policy to encourage people to move away from gasoline. And even those like few years that we'd save would, you know, save millions of tons of greenhouse gas emissions.
Right. And would you would you expect to see spillover effects? Like, in, like if you're building batteries for cars, like would it spill over into other categories like homes or other things?
Yeah, like when I was thinking about this, I was initially thinking about my iPhone, and like, you know, everyone complains about the battery life. So yeah, like that technology, what you said with homes is a great example, like with companies encouraging solar panels and like storage of power, like all of these, you know, things would like merge and like be more useful.
Yeah. I mean, I just got a new iPhone, and again, I feel like a piece of crap. Like I had a perfectly fine iPhone X, but the battery was, I guess I've had it for like a year or two, maybe a year and a half. I don't know. I forget when I got it, but the battery was degraded. I think I was down to like 75%, maybe 70% of the battery life. And I was like, okay, I literally walked by an Apple repair store as I was on my way to pick up the new iPhone. and I was just like, am I a bad person? Because I've just ordered this new phone. I don't really need it, but I want a nice shiny new thing. And I have the money for it. And I want a new battery. And I don't know, man. Like, how do you navigate those decisions as a human?
Yeah, I mean, that's very tough. And like, I feel like everything's built around consumption now. That you just have to like keep upgrading and like have to get the new thing. The technology has improved. Like, we are keeping our phones longer than we used to. So I'm positive or like optimistic that people will be more considerate with their decisions. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm perfect and like I don't do that, but I mean I'd probably do the same thing you did. But if they make it easy enough for us to just like go and swap your battery anytime, then, or like cheap enough, then we do that.
Yeah, I'm optimistic about. I know we've written about this for various clients before, but like the whole right to repair movement and
right.
it's much bigger over here in Europe. But yeah, I mean, I and thinking about just the options we offer to people, like I wish there was like a quick little portal, you know, either locally by the government or maybe through Apple that was like, hey, here's where to go, you know, your battery life's down, like here's where you go to fix it. And I feel like more and more of that stuff should be thought of, and I think this is where things like Facebook are headed and Google too, to almost be public utilities, you know, like right. I need a phone, right? I need the internet, and there should be some apparatus to support me in that, and it should be maybe semi-public or at least like, you know, highly regulated so that I can get it done cheaply and easily. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think you're right. That is maybe where we're headed. It's, you know, big political discussion. People want to make, you know, Google or Facebook or Amazon head in one direction based on their ultimate goals. But I definitely agree that we should have a system where these large tech companies that are, you know, integral part of our lives be focused on doing good intrinsically than just generating tons and tons of profit every year.
You're seeing it a little bit too. I just saw an article in The Guardian today that was, or maybe it was New York Times, but just sort of looking at, and like a classic millennial, I didn't read the article. I just read the headline. So sure, take it what you will. But it, you know, the article seemed to be looking at the contracts that tech companies like Google have secured to help with the rollout of the COVID vaccine. So you know that they definitely helped out on the front end with, like, I think it was called like Project Verity or something, to get people tested. So basically building a digital apparatus to, you know, get people booked in and everything. And then I think they're doing a similar thing with the vaccine distribution. But you're already seeing that where it's like,
yeah,
here's a private company serving a public end in partnership with the government. That's not profound in and of itself, right? But like, what, you know, that blurry line, like, where does it begin? Where does it end? And yeah, so. Along those lines, we're sort of already getting into this, we're sort of predicting, looking ahead, but like, what's your big prediction for tech for good this year and into 2022 and beyond?
Yeah, so I think this is actually what I was thinking about, you know, when you were just like discussing your answer. Was that I think that a lot of tech startups live in this Silicon Valley bubble. They raise a lot of money, create great products and services, but they don't try to, or like they don't aim to make a social impact beyond their user base. you know, for example, I can't recall any other company except Lemonade, which is a insurtech company that made it as a public benefit corporation, which is different from a B Corp. You know, it legally requires them to consider all stakeholders. So, I mean, since you said that, you know, that's kind of where I'm hopeful that's where things are heading, where we see socially responsible and mission-driven tech startups that think beyond users and growth and profit.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think the B Corp thing is interesting because, it is very different than being legally or regulatorily required,
right,
you know, to adhere to certain principles and stuff like that. It's yeah, I have more thoughts on B Corp, but another time.
Another time for
got
that.
Some hot takes on B Corp. Maybe we'll have them on. but yeah, I mean, I think it connects back to what we were saying before about how just like millennials and Gen Z and just people in general are like, all right, I want to like try to be a good person and buy things from companies that aren't burning the world. So how do I do that? And then companies responding, you know, and building with purpose from the beginning. So.
Yeah, and like you said, with Google or Facebook helping out with the vaccine distribution or like, you know, the testing and all that, you can see they have the ability to do these things from the start, but yet, you know, they were initially at least struggling with moderating content on their platforms and like keeping away, you know, false information specifically related to COVID at least, but you know, they often chose not to do the right thing. So does that cancel out the good they're doing now?
And it's an interesting thing that I have a friend who I'm trying to get on the pod who, you know, works at Facebook and it works for one of their more like promising tech for good initiatives in terms of deploying basically internet access in sub-Saharan Africa and just getting people connected and they're doing some really innovative stuff. I think that, I don't know if there's like balloons involved or satellites or some crazy tech stuff.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think she's a bit limited because the company is like, well, we don't want you going on and it's just like this mentality, I think, that's super unfortunate of like, we got to close ranks. We got to, you know, not, and it's a shame because it's like, you know, why would you not want someone to tell a beautiful story about good that Facebook is doing in the world because of some bullshit, you know, corporate comms restrictions and stuff like that. And it's, yeah, it's a shame.
But that goes back to your Shell Foundation example, right? You know, how you said like they're using this initiative or this foundation to cover up or like, not cover up, fine. Do good, build goodwill. So does that make it okay? In your opinion?
It's unfortunate because it's like, I think a lot of companies think of, you know, corporate social responsibility, CSR, they think of tech for good and any kind of social initiative as like window dressing and as marketing.
Right.
And we just had, you know, a previous guest, Reema Patel, who works for an organization called Impactful, where they like get inside these organizations and they help them actually, you know, be, as their name suggests, be truly impactful and really analyze like what they're doing wrong and what they could be doing right, which I think is, you know, obviously a growth industry right now. Companies are just hungry for that and people, because their audiences are too. So
yeah.
Last question, and this is sort of something that we keep coming back to when we talk about tech for good, but it's more on the individual level. And, you know, this idea that people working in tech for good, they're trying to build lives and careers that balance, you know, profit and purpose. You got to make money, you got to live, but you also want to, yeah, you know, do good and help people, help the world. So what's worked well for you? And I'm asking that specifically because we're trying to get away from advice that just goes out into the ether and doesn't necessarily apply. But like, what's worked well for you in building a life that balances profit and purpose?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for us, or like me specifically, we're at such an early stage with Calgy that it's hard to not only focus on growth and survival, you know, but I realized that, you know, for us to have a real impact, we have to grow so we can innovate. For example, we use plastic bottles in our product, which we know and like we're aware that this isn't eco-friendly. But I also realized that we can find a better solution along the way that may not be available to us right now. But as we grow and scale, like we can, you know, improve our process. And I believe like if we stick to our mission, profit will follow. And that's just something that, you know, I remind myself that by like doing the right thing and like building something that's, you know, sustainable for the future, the money will follow.
Yeah. Yeah. And good of you to be sort of, you know, upfront about that journey. And like, cause I think a lot of founders, they wouldn't sort of own up to the fact like, hey, we're doing this one thing that like, it's not great. It could be better, but like we need to and want to grow so that we can fix it and improve. And that's,
right.
Yeah, that's really noble. It's really admirable of you to do that. So appreciate you for that. Well, yeah. Well, let our listeners know where they can find you, where they can find Calji, and we'll include some links in the description, but, yeah, tell us where we can find you.
Yeah, so we're only sold on our website right now. The website is calji.com, and you can go ahead and buy our product from there. Unfortunately, we're only shipping within the US right now, but we do plan to expand overseas over time.
Yeah, we talked about that. I was a little butthurt that you can't ship anything over to London here, but I'll muddle through. I'll deal with it. So,
yeah. Maybe when you're visiting home.
Well, yeah, I think I may actually have my dad come over to London pretty soon. So I may like ship him some bottles and make him pack it. So with a few other things, obviously. So yeah, maybe some like massive amounts of Mexican food and stuff. So we'll see. I'm sure those tacos will travel very well. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just real quick, Calji, that's CALGEE.com, you said?
Yeah, that's Calji, CALGEE.
Well, hopefully you get some more excited customers who are, you know, taking advantage of, you know, your supplement that's hitting all the right notes, man. Vegan, ethically sourced, plant-based. I mean, that's awesome. So super happy to see your success and proud of you for it. And yeah, really glad to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It was a great conversation and a really good exchange of ideas.
Totally. Yeah, you were nervous about it, but you did great. So,
thanks.
Awesome stuff. Well, thanks, Pratik. And yeah, check out calji.com, everyone. And yeah, have a good rest of your week. Bye.